Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm trying to elevate small talk to medium talk.
Hi, I'm Alexander Chester. And Av, we're talking about semen now.
And I'm Av Sinensky. And Alex, you should have seen me at work today. I got laughs bigger than I've ever gotten before at a meeting.
Welcome back to Pretty Good, a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast. We are here today to discuss Season 12, Episode 5, Fish Stuck, which originally aired on March 3rd, 2024. Quite a wild week in the world of Curb, obviously. We started this episode with the Richard Lewis Memorial, which often comes after the episode, but I think it was very appropriate to be before here, especially since he was about to appear in the episode. From Beyond the Grave. So, it was bittersweet to see that.
Beyond the Grave.
Yes, but sweet because, again, we're getting much more Richard Lewis this season than we did last season, and it's a great way to go out.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to do, like, a quick emergency reaction to the news of Richard Lewis's passing earlier this week. You know, I jumped on with you and Akiva on 32 Fans. We played that over here. It's definitely been a week of a lot of tributes to Richard Lewis.
Were you surprised by how much sort of media again, it's an algorithmic world, so maybe it's just my world, but like right. There were like five different articles in the New York Times about him.
Honestly, I think it's just like the fact that he happened to die while the final season of Curb is airing, I think probably, elevated it a lot. Okay. It's already very in the zeitgeist, I think. Everyone just had like Larry David and the whole gang doing all like the morning shows and this and that and the Elmo thing. For him to die like right in the middle of that. And like, I think that like for sure helped propel it more into the news than it otherwise would have been. But I think he also is just like a very beloved person in show business, and people that knew him were really very fond of him and really admired his talent and all that like he accomplished and like, all that he overcame with, his personal demons that he, I think what we even see in this very episode is that he was always able to be very vulnerable about. And that's like such an amazing thing to be able to like use comedy to help people. And it's like played for laughs in this episode, as we'll see later. But it's like, I think that was a big thing that appealed to people who really liked Richard Lewis's comedy, is like his ability to get like across that, like those dark lines and into the places that like people normally like to talk about.
Yeah. There's something interesting about both Bob Einstein and Richard Lewis in that they had like a half a century careers in comedy. But really to the broader world, I think they really only most emerged in, the last quarter of their life, basically because of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
But that enabled people. Now, I knew Richard Lewis first from playing Prince John and Robin Hood Men in Tights, which was my default answer to my favorite movie for the first like 25, 30 years of my life. I don't know if it's my favorite movie, but it's certainly a movie I like a lot and I've seen many, many times. And so that's what I knew. Yeah.
I mean, I recognize him now as being that guy from there, but I only know who he is from Curb. He's otherwise would have been like lost to history to me.
I think he has the record for the most appearances on Letterman. I did hear that on a couple of podcasts this week. Yeah. Cool. So, which means that there's endless. I mean, you can literally, there's like 3 hour pasted together YouTube videos of Richard Lewis appearances on Letterman and different shows. So you can go watch that. It's a little hit or miss. I wouldn't say it's 100% hits, but mostly lots of good stuff there. So
yeah. There was lots of great tributes from friends and colleagues. I would say the one that most apropos to this podcast, the one that I think touched me the most, was the one from Larry David himself. He said, Richard and I were born 3 days apart in the same hospital, and for most of my life, he's been like a brother to me. He had that rare combination of being the funniest person and also the sweetest, but today he made me sob, and for that, I'll never forgive him. So, yep. You know, obviously the relationship that we see on screen seems to be comes from a very deep personal fondness in real life, and like it was always just always very apparent there. You know, personal life and show life kind of crossing. Obviously very sad for the Holker family. And I would say that we got a very appropriate episode to like lift our spirits and also like have something meaningful to say even maybe and give Richard some real last gold to work with before sending him off. I don't know if this will be the last we see of him. I guess we probably would have heard that if that was the case. So I assume we'll see him at least once more. But for certainly one of the final Richard Lewis's appearances and the one that like crescendoed his passing, I think was really, really one that we all kind of deserved.
Yep. So are we ready to hop into the episode?
We can do that. I definitely have seen a lot more activity in the Postman, some new names, some new fans. So like we certainly are very excited to have all of you on board. We blinked. I don't know how to even say that. You snapped your fingers. We are now halfway done with this final season.
Don't say that.
I don't know how that just happened.
Yeah, very
but
sad.
We just watched episode 5 that we're about to talk about. And, you know, so if you've jumped on board, you want to help the podcast grow, you're always invited to head on over and rate and review us on the Apple Store or various other platforms where you can do that. If you want to send in something to the Postman, we'll talk about that later. Oh, should we talk about that now? So this week, we're going to do something a little bit different with the Postman, which is that we're going to have a special guest for the Postman. There's a certain rabbi that we're going to be meeting later in this episode, and the real-life version of the rabbi will be joining us. So if you have any questions for him, you could send those in. Any questions about the episode, your feedback, all the different categories do we hear. Get involved. It's fun stuff. We got to put you into the spreadsheet, and you got a say in the ratings. It's very exciting. So send all that stuff in. Yeah, let's go into this. Alex, I did not make it any secret that I really, really love this episode in our curb chat. I was shooting out fire symbols, putting out those heart emojis. I was really loving this episode, so I'm excited to talk about it with you. We start out continuation of the Larry legal case, right? He's in a new lawyer's office. I guess he decided to fire the lawyer who looked like Mocha Joe.
Yeah, so he fired Hitler Joe. The problem is you would need a Georgia lawyer here, right?
This is obviously.
State law in Georgia.
Humongous red flag.
Yes, you. Literally, not just because you need a lawyer who understands Georgia law, but literally to get up in court in Georgia, you would need a Georgia lawyer, not a California lawyer. I'm going to assume that Christopher Mantle is not licensed to practice law in Georgia based on my minimal interactions with him. And so, not exactly clear why Larry has hired this new lawyer. But anyway, it's also weird, like, Christopher Mantle here, Sean Hayes, he reassures Larry that this is going to go away easily, a motion dismiss, he's going to avoid a trial. Like, the whole point was Larry needed to go to trial in order to parade himself around as the hero, right? Like, that's how his time in Atlanta left. That the community was going to hate him if he didn't go to trial.
Right. And nothing has changed in that regard.
That part, none of this makes sense. Did you notice that this Sean Hayes does not, this lawyer does not have a computer on his desk?
I did not notice that, no.
Which is completely unrealistic. I've never seen a lawyer who does not have a computer. And by the way, perhaps if he had a computer and an electronic calendar giving him notifications of things, he wouldn't forget about important dates and deadlines and things like that.
Another important reason why you want like local counsel is that like in the event that like you fuck up and miss a deadline, like you could pick up the phone to someone there that you have a relationship with and work it out. It's all in good faith. Whereas if you're some asshole from California,
yes,
who's like nobody knows, they're going to tell you to go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I also thought it was like he's like we're going to see it. There's a lot of ways and this lawyer is not a good lawyer. He declares that this law is unconstitutional, which is patently absurd.
Yeah.
To say that you have a constitutional right to water while online. No, that's not. It violates maybe like the Voting Rights Act or something like that. It's not unconstitutional.
This is Sean Hayes going a little bit off script, probably, but yes.
Well, I don't know why Susie recommended such
a movie. I don't know if you listen to this podcast. He's a very talented guy, a great actor, comedian, pianist, etc. He's not the sharpest tool in the shed on like political and legal topics. So,
yeah. So, yeah. Larry is like, okay, fine. Enough about my case. Move on. Let's talk about more important things. You have an awesome name. And he's like, yeah, listen, like, I actually, like, I'm not a big baseball fan, but like, I know who Mickey Mantle is. And it turns out that they're both being dragged to the same temple event later. Larry's being dragged there by Irma, and Chris has a Jewish husband that is making him go.
Get the assistant intercoms in, which is another thing that bothers me, because the phone would ring. You wouldn't just get like a beep and Denise on, like, you wouldn't hear the assistant's voice before the phone rang. I feel like I've worked at five different offices and they all had identical phone systems. So,
you could set it up however you want.
I get maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
If that's like how he just wants his office to run.
Yeah. How does it run? Because later on, Larry will just wander in there when he's in his pajamas.
We'll have to get to that.
Yeah.
So he has a call from the surrogate. They explain. Yeah. He explains that him and his husband are having a baby. And Larry's like, oh, that's so interesting. I never thought about this. But like, how do gay couples decide like which last name to use? Yeah. Which, you know, fair question. I'm sure it's something that always has to be decided, or some combination or something.
Yeah, hyphen combination. Do you think that Larry has any recollection of already doing a surrogate story on Curb?
No way.
Yeah. And do you think anybody mentioned it to him during the filming this episode? Like, Larry, you did this before. Remember the surrogate and she was pregnant and you told her not to give up the baby.
Yeah. This is also very similar to the lesbian couple with like who's the groom and who's the bride and the lesbian couple.
The assistant. Yeah.
So
Larry's of a different generation. He's very good.
So he says that actually they're going with the husband's name, which is Zekelman. And Larry is like baffled by this.
Yes.
He's like, this is crazy. Like, why would you choose Zekelman when Mantle is right there? Mantle is a much better name.
Well,
and she's not wrong.
If he focused mostly on that, he would have been better. I think it was Jared who pointed this out in the group chat. And I apologize. Last week I miscredited somebody for something. I think it was Kenny. Maybe I was supposed to credit. I apologize if that's a miscredit. But this is like a classic example of Larry making himself sound as bad as possible. He doesn't need a trash Zekelman to compliment Mantle.
Right.
Just focus on how great Mantle is.
Right.
But instead, he has to say, no, Zekelman is terrible.
Forget Zekelman. Yeah. Zekelman is fine. You got Mantle.
Yes, exactly. That's what he could have said. Instead, he needs to focus on how Zekelman is a terrible name, by which he means Jewish. Anyway.
So I mean, that's really what's going on behind the scenes here, right? This Jew has to show his parents and grandparents that he kept the Jewish name, probably.
Fine,
he's gay, but
I guess that's true. Yeah, I'm rooting for Zekelman over Mantle. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. At least we're preserving the Jewish name in society.
Yeah, I want you to raise the kid Jewish, which obviously they're doing. He's dragging his husband to Shagat's husband to shul. He's making him take the name. Yeah. So this kid will be very Jewish.
Larry's proof that Mantle is better than Zekelman is that he is unaware of any Zekelmans who hit 536 home runs.
To which Chris Mantle says, and I thought it was a good line. He says, Yet. Yeah.
That's like very reminiscent of because it's on TV.
Yeah. Yeah, not yet. Yes.
So we obviously know over the years Larry's obsessed with Mickey Mantle. George was obsessed with Mickey Mantle. Mm. Definitely, you know, running theme. When Lewis is getting the kidney, right? It's the Mickey Mantle ball, right?
Yeah.
And Larry does his like Mick hitting home run imitation rounding
his
bases.
Trot. Yeah.
Yeah, his trot.
By the way, beautiful name for a boy or a girl.
Several, and or soda.
Yeah.
Or for a survivor player.
Yeah.
Or for a survivor misnomer.
Yeah. But not as good as the names that Larry will pose at this
time. We'll get to those, I'm sure. So we head on over to the Chinese restaurant where...
So we're allowed to eat somewhere other than the country club, finally.
Yeah. Where we get our... Who's in our gang here for Chinese? We got Larry, we got Leon, we got Freddie. Notably missing is Jeff. And
all episode.
Not just from this restaurant, from this episode.
Yeah, strange. Why would Jeff not be at these social gatherings?
It's a good
He only eats at the club.
He only eats at the club, right. He has to use up his tab, as I'm your point.
Yeah.
So,
we will get that one quick Susie scene. But yes, nothing from Jeff all episode, unfortunately.
Yeah, so Freddie is telling Leon DeLarry all about his new girlfriend, Jenna, and he is raving about her. She is smart. She's pretty. She's funny. She tells great stories. We just like she knows so much about like TV because like she works at Disney and like she's like knows all these things that are going on in pop culture and music. And like
she knows what the costumes, the characters wear.
Yeah, the costumes. Right. She knows like all the latest trends with the princess.
Did you notice on the second watch how that scene hits a little bit differently?
Yes. And we're going to have to talk about this, about how like, you know, clearly the way, you know, what we see this woman at the end, like nothing changed. Like,
yes,
as they'll say many times,
she can't stop talking about her job.
Right. And in very somehow. Detail. So like somehow this all went over his head. But like, it's very much like, I don't want to say the intellectual, but I guess it's just like the status version of like the Two-Face.
Yeah.
Where like when it's like
it's all in the eye of the beholder.
Right.
The
when the click is on, like it's all like you don't see anything. And then once like the glass is shattered, like you see all the warts. So yeah, similar thing. And yeah, so basically like he thinks that like she has this like high powered executive job for like the Disney Corporation. And, you know, as we'll see, it's maybe a little bit less ambitious than that. So yeah, so Larry is like, wow, I've never seen you like this into a relationship. So excited for you. Meanwhile, Leon is just like very focused on Freddie's jacket. He's like making, you know, giving compliments to it. And he asks him if he could pass along a message to Jenna. He wants to know about Tinkerbell's fine ass. When Larry's like, this is very, you know, perverse. This is a perversion that you have this obsession with a thimple-sized fairy. Yeah. What does Leon say to that?
Would you like me to read it?
I would love for you to.
All right. Well, he says, you know, Tinkerbell flies her little ass in there. She puts her little booty out with that little booty tooch. That little booty go out and bling. Tinkerbell is fine as fuck. Come on. I'll put her in my motherfucking pocket. You hear me? And I'll just walk around knowing she's home. And she flies her little ass out of there, gives me a little kiss on the cheek, and shit, she flies the fuck off. Leon's talk about Tinkerbell. Was this in the outline, or this is just JB Smoove came up with this? I don't know.
There's no chance even Tinkerbell was in the outline.
Amazing.
I don't think so. There's no way like, they wrote in, he asks about Tinkerbell. Like, that's like, clearly from JB Smoove.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. So maybe it says they're talking about Disney or even that. Who knows? Yeah. This is all JB Smoove. Wow.
Are you familiar with the Mandela effect involving Tinkerbell?
No.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Are you at all familiar or have a memory of an opening Disney animated scene where Tinkerbell comes and puts her wand on the castle on the eye?
Oh, lights it up or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So right. This is okay. Mandela effect. This never happened?
Never happened, apparently.
Okay. So why do I think of that?
I don't know. A lot of people do. I do too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I'm 100% sure I've seen that at the beginning of a million Disney movies.
Yeah. Can I say, by the way, at the risk of getting canceled here, she is fine as fuck. Julia Roberts played her in Hook. Julia Roberts, very attractive. That was Julia Roberts' like peak. She was like the biggest like star in America.
It was very much in the middle. Yeah, it was like very much in the middle of her apex. Yeah.
I never understood, like, you were supposed to hate that movie, and I never understood why. Hook? I love that movie. Yeah.
Hook is very fun, but I saw it as a kid.
I was like 10, so it was perfect for me. But Robin Williams, Rufio, like everything about that movie was great. Yeah. But like, it's rated
Rufio,
like
Rufio.
Yeah, but it's like Spielberg's lowest rated movie or something, and the critics are dorks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Tinkerbell, fine as fuck. Everyone agrees. And Larry looks over into the aquarium in the restaurant and sees that there's this orange fish that appears to be stuck in the filter.
Yeah.
And like they go up and they look close and they're like, yeah, this fish is stuck. Like, oh my God, the poor fish. Like that looks like that looks really painful and uncomfortable. Like, let's see if we could get him some help. And he calls over one of the waiters and he's like, hey, this fish is stuck. Like, we should help him. And the waiter's like, no, he's not stuck. He's just sick. And he's nuzzling on the filter because it makes him feel warm and makes him feel better.
Yeah.
So I wrote down in my notes, no stuck sick is the 2024 equivalent of no shot dog bite.
Yeah. Now, fish stuck is sort of a silly name for the episode because it's like a fourth storyline.
Oh, no. Fish stuck is the episode. What are you talking about?
Oh, okay. So you like the name.
You see, it's a metaphor, Alex.
Yeah. Okay. I got it. There is something a little awkward to me, and you know, this is like Larry doesn't give a fuck, but like it's 2024, and he's still leaning into like the Seinfeld stereotype that Asians and Americans all speak pidgin English. Like that. Yeah, like yeah. I mean, and again, it does make it funnier that they say fish suck, fish stick, fish suck, fish stick. But yeah, it's a little it's a little bit cringy.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how Larry always argues with people also.
Anyway,
like,
yes.
Right, exactly. Like, in just, like, one word
yeah.
sentences.
Yeah, it's a word
So, yeah, so Leon says that all this talk of fish is making him hungry from some fish.
Oh, that's
and he orders the snapper.
Yeah.
And, Larry feels bad for this, for the stuck fish still. Leon's like, at least he can't drown.
Yeah, which is a pretty brilliant analysis. Although, is that true?
Fish can't drown.
But if it can't move, then would that impede its ability to breathe? I don't know. It's gills. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how any of this works.
I have a fish.
I'm a marine biologist.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. The great fish.
All right. Mammal, so. We're gonna all pay a little visit to AA. I don't know why. I guess Larry comes like it's like over, so he's allowed to be there.
Yeah, he's come to pick up Irma. I think so.
Okay, so it's like there's a time that you're allowed to come in, I guess. But well, isn't it supposed to be anonymous? That, who's in it? Like,
I think that friends and family are allowed to come anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
I
not
guess.
Only,
I feel like you have to be invited.
I think it's open.
I guess he's invited.
I don't know. Who knows what the rules are? Because
obviously it's very strict later that that Richard's not allowed to repeat something to him that was at the meeting that he wasn't at.
Well, you're not supposed to say something to someone not at the meeting, yeah.
Of course, no, that's what I'm saying. So it's like it is very strict.
Unless they offer you to put you in their will. What about they don't
even
know details
even necessary. If it's as a trick.
Yeah.
So first we have this like funny bit where Larry goes to take a donut and Irma. Irma's just like, in addition to being disgusting, she's also like nasty. Like, she's like, you can't have a donut. Like,
she's bad in every way.
There's exactly one for each person, and you can't have one, which is like, of course, ridiculous. Like, no event in history has had only one donut per person. There's like minimum three per person.
This is the kind of thing that Larry would say. I do think Irma really is a female Larry in many ways. He would like strictly enforce a rule that only exists in his head.
But this one is just like way off.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yes. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, I guess some of Larry's are also, but like I think this one is just way off. Like that for sure. Like there's enough. Like, there's extra donuts for Larry to have a donut. Yeah.
I think Irma just likes to lord over like her alcoholism. Is like these are for me and my people.
There's more. Like they got more donuts than people. Yeah. Half the people are not going to have one. Like there's always leftover when it's like pastry like that.
Yeah.
That I go home with and then eat at home and be sad about eating. But enough about meetings.
Yeah.
So So then Cyrus comes over and, you know, he's telling him about how, you know, Richard Lewis gave this like amazing speech during the meeting. Irma's not so thrilled. She thinks he spoke for too long. He used a lot of inappropriate language. I think he even said hell four times, which clearly was, you know, a reference to the fact that he was doing a lot of his blank
old,
from hell.
Old material. Yeah.
Which
Larry will call him on.
And it's also like awesome that like it fell out this week that like we got like a reference to like one of his most famous things in this episode. So that's a pretty good time there.
By the way, I was listening to these comedians on a podcast and they actually made a good point. I think it was I forget which comedian it was.
Us? Are we the comedians on a podcast?
Yeah. No. But they were saying like comedian and like Jerry Seinfeld does this for sure. Where like they will mix in like in when they're doing a set, they will mix in some of their old jokes, and then the problem is that even if your old jokes are only like 2% of all the words you say, if you're like a hardcore fan of the person, you'll remember those and you'll go away thinking, oh yeah, he did a bunch of his old stuff, because like you'll remember like those are sort of triggers you because you recognize them. And the smarter thing to do, let's say if you have only 45 minutes of new material as an example and you want to do 60 minutes, is do your 45 minutes of new material and then tell the crowd, now I'm going to do some old stuff. Prep them that way, and then they remember be, oh yeah, he did all this new stuff, and then he also gave us a bonus of old stuff. If you're an aspiring comedian putting together an hour of stand-up good.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good description though. Yeah. But Richard's pretty confident that this crowd at the AA meeting, he can mix in the old stuff.
Maybe at the end of this podcast, we'll do some old stuff.
Yeah, we'll do another episode.
Do we have
the beloved aunt?
Do we have old stuff?
We have 115 old episodes of Curb.
Yeah, I guess that's our old stuff.
Yeah.
Asking the group, which is the old stuff. That's like, you know, the classic stuff.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned last week how awful Richard looked, but like that was before he actually died. He really does look like a ghost in this episode. And it's not just how he looks, but how he's talking. His voice is so raspy and weak.
The whole everything.
Yeah. And so I really felt like he was coming from the great beyond.
Yeah. He looks almost as bad as Biden.
Yeah. That having been said, I absolutely love the idea of Richard using AA meetings as a form of a comic stage. And I really love the idea of a special being delivered in that environment. Obviously, couldn't be a relay meeting for confidential reasons, but like
But you could do it. You could do one, and you could do a special that everyone signs off on, and it's just his. So obviously, it's not subject to confidentiality because it's
all. Yes, like, I think it's actually a great idea, and I think someone should do it. Best guy to do it just died, unfortunately.
Yeah, you either do it with actors or you do it with people who sign waivers.
Either way, they're the audience. The audience just sits in a circle and pretends that they're at an AA meeting. Yeah.
Right. Or probably all the people who are in the wood would be like, oh, I'd love to be in the special. You know, they don't care. Yeah.
It's funny. He wrote a book and had, I think, an hour called The Other Great Depression. Gary Gulman, he had a special on Max, so one of my favorite, called The Great Depression.
Yeah.
So I wonder how many other comedians who suffer from depression have had a Great Depression punned titled a special or book. I'm sure those can't be the only two.
Probably not. I think it's a very common overlap
of
traits with being stand-up comedian and depression being things that are talked about a lot. So,
All right, but hold on. But before we get to Richard, so Cyrus has the request of Larry, and you know that his daughter's a writer, and I don't really understand this. Why is Larry, when Larry's asked by Cyrus about his daughter's writing, like, why is Larry giving the script to someone else anyway? Like, Cyrus is asking him because he's a writer, right? It's sort of weird that his default is to hand it off to Jenna. And also, by the way, unless he himself has reviewed the script, why would he even think or know there would be something appropriate for Jenna anyways? Like, she works at Disney, but he doesn't know. Maybe it's an adult thing. Maybe it's a children's thing. Maybe he doesn't know anything about it. All he knows is that Cyrus
has. Yeah, well, at that point, he's just trying to dump it on, like, you know, he comes into close with one person who's like, okay, you're in this business.
But is that true? Because he says when he asks Jenna, he says that he hates asking for favors even more than he hates doing them.
He's trying to unload. He's trying to foist it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
So
it's necessary for the storyline, but it doesn't really make sense to me why he's handing this off to Jenna.
Yeah. So Larry agrees to, you know, he says he'll think about it. Yeah. He goes in for a hug, but Larry has a no touching policy.
Yes, no touching.
So
now we get to Richard Lewis.
Yeah, we kind of covered it.
I love it. There was a sad old lady who opened for me, but she only did 10 minutes. Like in his mind, this is a stand-up set.
Right.
That you go to a digi basement and you do a set. Yeah.
She was also doing a set. Right. Yeah. She wasn't just spilling her real life. They do have this whole thing about, you know, it really would be a great idea for the special. And Larry says, like, the most impressive part is, like, no one was even drinking. Like, there was some way to do it, but also have them drinking. But, like, obviously, you know, that's, like, you know, a paradox. But,
I think Dr. Jen would prefer this one because we're going on a date tomorrow. And I said, do you want to go to a comedy club? And she's like, no, because there's always the 2-drink minimum, and I don't want to get the drinks. So we should go to an AA comedy club.
There you go.
No drink minimum.
No drinks, zero, no drink maximum.
Yeah, that's true. Also, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to go to Shul. And I would say this was, like, I think the highlight of the episode for me, this scene. This scene is just, like, banger after banger after banger.
It's great.
It's, like, unreal.
Now it starts with Irma, and I discovered, speaking of Dr. Jen, I discovered something watching this episode with my wife. She is the world's biggest Irma Kostrowski fan. Oh, every single word that came out of Irma's mouth, Jen was dying. I mean, like, we'd pause the episode because Jen was, like, laughing so hard she couldn't breathe. We had to, like, pause for her to catch up.
She is very funny.
And it starts right here with at the synagogue reception where she says she needs to build her rice base before she eats the meats on the pasta hors d'oeuvres. Uh-huh. And Larry says, yeah, go build your rice base.
Yeah, Larry hates her gut so much. It's great. Yeah.
Now, I will say that Irma's attitude is very much in line with mine and Jen's, especially at an event with food, which is you got to focus on the food and strategize. I don't know if Jen's ever used the expression rice base, but certainly Jen is always on the lookout for getting the best food. And it's a thing I love about her. So,
yeah, no, I agree. Very important trait.
I usually go to the bar first, but then you make your way to the food. I didn't see a bar at the synagogue reception.
Yeah. And yeah, like buffet, smorgasbord style, stuff like that. Very, very high ceiling.
Yeah.
It can be real. Those are some real great stuff. When you get like that really great variety.
Yeah, nobody ever wants to sit down at a meal. Yeah, let people go pick what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do like to have a place to sit.
No, I agree. Served. But, yeah. No, but I'm a buffet man over a plate.
I hate eating and standing though.
Yeah. Yes. For sure. Yes. You want to, because then you're holding the glass in one hand, yeah, you're holding the plate in the other hand. Exactly. You got your fork, and then if you got to cut a piece of meat, impossible. Yeah. It's a big problem.
Try to have a conversation. Like, forget about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So first we're gonna then bump into Freddie and Jenna. Mm.
Yeah. So I understand why everyone else at this reception is going to be there, right? Larry's there because Irma dragged him there because she was somehow involved at the city level with the synagogue being able to convert the landfill into the courtyard or something.
So you want to know why Freddie and Jenna are here?
Yes. Mantle is there because his Jewish husband is a member of the synagogue. Sienna Miller's there because she's converting with the rabbi.
Freddie is a donor at the synagogue.
He is?
Yeah, his name is on the wall.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, we'll see it during the episode.
Oh, he has a brick, you mean?
Yeah, he has a brick.
Yeah, the Greens have a brick also, by the way. They don't bother to show up at the reception.
There's a brick that says Freddie Funkhauser on it.
Yes, but that's sort of circular logic. But he has a brick because he's there, but why is he? So basically, this is his synagogue, you're saying?
This is his synagogue, or maybe his brick is at the end, so maybe he is attending as one of the donors of the new bricks.
Okay, so then my other question is where are the Greens? Why is Jeff not here? Well, this whole episode.
Yeah,
his name's on the wall.
It does, yeah, there's the Greens.
The other word
they must have been almost, out of town or something.
For almost all the bricks, it doesn't have first name. It just says the Greens, the Bloomfields. It just has like the, and like for couples. And then for individuals like Freddie, it has the full name.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Somebody
that, of course, will be a little bit. And then, of course, for only four bricks, for exactly four bricks, no more, no less, there will be, in addition to the name, there'll be a personal message.
Okay, so then. Oh, so fine. So first we bump into Jenna, and he asks if she, would you be willing to read this script? And she's just like, willing? Like, yeah, that would be amazing. It would be my pleasure. And like still here, I'm still totally in the dark the first time around. I'm like, okay, this is totally fine. She's just like really nice and like being charming, and that's fine.
Oh, really? I thought it was very obvious from the first scene that she did not have the job that Funkhauser thought she did. I didn't know what she did, but I knew she was not an executive for Disney.
Oh, interesting. I was totally with it until for a while.
She's like, she looks like she's this little petite, like 25-year-old, like, and he, I don't know. So
I didn't necessarily think that she was like some high powered executive.
No, but
I
even in the restaurant,
I thought she had a real job. Like,
before I saw her, I knew she didn't, because there was a vagary about it that just seemed, I didn't know what she did. Again, on the rewatches where I noticed, the characters and all that.
Right. Anyway, so
the irony is, by the way, he will lose interest in her. I think her skills are actually the voices she does.
Oh, she's very talented.
Yeah, she's got more talent than some generic. Listen, I've dealt with a lot of executives. They're not that great.
Yeah. So where I thought this episode was going at first was I thought she was like a real like studio person, and that she thought that Larry wrote the script, and like, because when he kept saying, be like, okay, I'll give her the notes, like that, like she's going to like think that she's giving notes to Larry, and like that something's going to develop between them. That's where I thought this was going, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Way off. They head out, and then Larry gets approached by Abe Zekelman and Christopher Mantle. And Abe
Dan
is like,
Levy.
Dan Levy joins us. Hayes. Yeah. And
which we did know from like the season preview trailer.
Yes. And he's like, oh, so this is the guy? And he comes over at him and he's like, why do you think that my last name is not good enough for a baby? And they get into
easy answer here. Your last name is fine. Your husband's last name is the same as the greatest baseball player of all time. That's right. The easy answer here.
And it's also an inherently better sounding name. Like Mantle is like a good, strong, good, solid name. Like Zekelman is ridiculous sounding.
So you're on Team Chester over Sinetsky, you're saying.
Obviously.
It wasn't Chester in the old country. I can that's a secret, guys.
Who cares? In this country is the only country that matters.
Well, it wasn't changed in Ellis Island, by the way, because that's not true.
That's not a thing, right?
Yes. It was changed by my grandfather because he wanted to sound less Jewish.
Right. So then
he kept meeting people who thought that we were a bit much. So
Larry, he tries to like cover for his tracks here, and he's just like, well, it's like it's one thing that like the name Zekelman isn't so bad, but it's like already your kids are gonna have like the different thing, they're gonna be unique with the two dads. So like, you don't have to make it worse by like piling on Zekelman with that. And they're like completely offended. They're like, what do you mean unique? Like, there's nothing unique about our situation. Like, this is totally normal. He's like, yeah. But like, you know, like slightly different, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, so like, now that I have you both here, so like, how was it? Did you decide which name to use? Like, why did you choose Zekelman and not Mantle? Like, what was the process here? I assume it's because you were the sperm donor. So, you know, the sperm followed the name.
No. He did not say you were the sperm donor. He said, I assume it's because it's your semen. He jumped right to the word semen.
I assume
which
it's
is why Dan Levy says, oh, so now we're discussing semen, apparently. semen is a don't you feel semen is a much more personal word than sperm?
Yeah.
People will talk about sperm donors. People are, you know, people don't talk about semen donors.
Right. He's like, whose jizz was it?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So he's like, well, if you must know, not that it's any of your business.
Yeah. You must, but
Mantle was actually the biological father. And
really,
like,
Abe is correct in the fight between him and Chris. Chris keeps like oversharing and indulging Larry in ways that are completely unnecessary.
Right. Yeah. Yes. He keeps pushing it. And he's like, you know, this is, you know, beyond perplexing. Like, it's one thing if you just find, you follow the sperm, you have to go with Zekelman. But here, Mantle is the sperm, and you specifically go away from Mantle to choose Zekelman. It boggles Larry's comprehension.
Yeah. Now, I've never engaged in a negotiation like this, so I'm speaking totally ignorantly here.
Yeah.
My wife decided to change her last name to mine, and our kids have that name as well. I'm neither advocating for nor opposing that. That's what you wanted to do, and that's great. However, I think I don't buy Larry's argument that the sperm donor automatically gets the last name. I think there'd be a good argument for the opposite. Like, we're going to take your name, but my genes, so that the baby's a mix.
Interesting.
So I think Larry's assumption, right. I guess Larry's assumption is that there's like a dominant and a submissive in this relationship or something.
Right.
In all respects.
Right. Well, it's because like he views it as the, you know, the patrimony.
Well, in my family, we took my name and my sperm. So
yeah.
So not that there's anything wrong with Jen's sperm. We just, you know.
Yeah. So you're saying it's like we should perpetuate your genetics, but my legacy. Or my, you know, nameology, genealogy.
Well, I speaking totally ignorantly here, but I think what I've heard, like two men couples who are having kids often do, is they will both make donations at the bank, as it were, and then they will never be told exactly whose it is that is in the sort of the successful implantation.
Isn't it often pretty obvious though?
Sure, but the point is going in. You're not, yeah. Like, if one person of the couple is Swedish and one is Nigerian, and the baby, yeah, you'll probably get a clue. I agree, but the point is that you're not therefore making an active decision. It's sort of randomized.
Right. All right. Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea. Everyone should do whatever the fuck they want.
And by the way, when I've heard like one person say they did that, so I'm just assuming that's a default. I have no idea.
Right. No, I mean, obviously, I knew that whatever you were saying was based on like one anecdote that you're
probably
entirely. It didn't happen at all.
Surprisingly, when I meet gay couples having kids, I don't ask them about the semen. I should, obviously.
You should ask them whose semen.
Yes, of course.
Was it one of yours? And if not, then I need to know what third party semen.
Yeah. And by the way, I have some names if you're interested.
Yeah. So, So now he's like, all right, fine. We'll give in on Zekelman. Let's move on to first names. And he has some fantastic suggestions.
Yes.
He's clearly
thinking, I think, sort of like old timey baseball, maybe because of the Mantle thing.
Yeah, so he leads off with Ziggy.
Well, no. Before Ziggy, we have Dash, Dazzy, and Dan are the first three.
Yeah, no, I think those come at the end. I think Ziggy.
No. Those come first because he actually says Larry is a terrible name. So they keep trying to dig at him that he has two first names, which I've said to too, because I have that as well. Uh-huh. But it's not like an insult. It's just like it's observation.
Yeah.
So he mentions Dash, Dazzy, and Dan.
I'd much rather have a last name that's a first name than a bad last name. It's like not even close.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I think I personally don't love the last name as first name because people assume that your last name is your first name. But for some reason, I think with David's, it's less common. Again, speaking from a sample size of one, but the one person I know whose last name is David, he's never referred to as David. He's never referred to as his first name. He's always referred to by both his first name and last name, the equivalent of Larry David. I don't know why. Eras David is his name. Everybody calls him Eras David. No idea why. But I think David, whereas people don't universally call me Alex Jester. In fact, nobody really does. All right. So we have Dash, Dazzy, and Danya. Then we get on to the real recommendations, which, as you said, we start with Ziggy Zekelman.
I think Ziggy Zekelman is a great name.
I think Ziggy Zegelman or Ziggelman would be great. Because it's not a G in the middle in the last name, but a CK, it's a little confusing.
Yeah.
But what about
Zach? I think Ziggy's a great name in general. Scooter, we got.
Okay. Yeah. So Scooter's next.
The best one by far is Foots.
Foots. And he says, Foot? No, Foots. So these are all names of 1920s mobsters. It's very strange.
Deegan, like the Major Deegan Express vibe?
Yeah. So that after Foots comes Doc. Now, Av, we had a kid in our class in high school whose first name was Doctor.
Doctor, yes.
Yeah.
And now he's a doctor.
He is a doctor now, so he's Doctor. And by the way, I was in high school with him for 3 years. You're in high school for 4 years. The day I found out his first name was Doctor was at our high school graduation. I never knew that before that.
I knew.
Oh, and then Jen went to medical school with him. So yes, many times the joke was made. Then we get to Ace, and then the Dewey Duncan Deegan after the Major Deegan Expressway. Because there's nothing a gay couple in California wants to like name their kid after some old Jew from Brooklyn's favorite highways that he grew up.
Favorite. Deegan is a cool name, actually.
Yeah, it's like an Irish last name, is it not?
I could see it becoming like a waspy white girl name.
Deegan? Yeah. As a first name?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Do we know?
It's like a twist on Megan. Deegan.
Yeah, I can't find the Major Deegan Expressway. I can't find out who it's named after.
Really?
You'd think that would be on the Wikipedia page for it, but yeah. It's not.
I-87.
Yes. Okay. It is named for Major William F. Deegan, a Bronx veteran architect and politician. Okay. Major William F. Deegan. That's the answer. Yeah. But Larry's proposing it as a first name. Do we know, by the way, that this baby's a boy? Larry just assumes that. Because these are all sort of male-leaning names. Not that Scooter and Foots and Doc aren't beautiful names for a girl.
Or a boy.
Yeah.
I guess we're just going with it.
Yeah. Now, we need to at least mention, obviously neither one qualifies for this a dancing club.
Would you stop with the Ted dance?
Who's he?
He's somebody.
What about me?
You're nobody.
Why him? Why not me?
He's good. You're not.
I'm better than him.
You're worse. Much, much worse.
But our two big cameos of the episode, Sean Hayes and Dan Levy here.
Sean Hayes is like maybe in his prime. It's something to talk about. Now, obviously not.
No, he's not in his prime. You think he's in his prime now?
I said if this was when he was in his prime.
Yeah.
There would at least be something to talk about. Now, yeah. Obviously not.
No, yeah. Will and Grace. Yeah, now, yeah, he's on a podcast where I know him from, but yes. But Will and Grace certainly is his prime.
If it was at the height of Will and Grace, right.
Dan Levy's prime was probably COVID when everybody watched Schitt's Creek, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, he hasn't really had that like next big thing yet.
Well, he's been directing things, but as a.
That's fine.
Has Eugene Levy ever been on Curb? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, he would. It would be probably too much. He has too much Larry David energy already.
Yeah. Dan Levy. What has he been doing lately? He directed Good Grief. He starred in it also, never mind. And then what else has he done? That's the most recent thing on his post Schitt's Creek section of his Wikipedia page. So
then we have like part three of this temple scene where Larry turns around, he starts looking at this, wall monuments that's been going up. And he sees that one of the bricks says in big black and white, Larry David is disrespectful to women, dedicated by Hobie Turner.
Mm-hmm. Now, Av, when you got a brick at Citi Field,
yes,
what kind of restrictions did they put on it?
I'm sure there was a lot.
Did you want to say Alex Chester is disrespectful of the Mets?
Right. Fuck Fred Wilpon. I have freedom of speech.
Yes. It's obviously a hilarious bit, but yes, there's no way in hell a synagogue is putting that on a brick.
The idea of taking out a brick to say something, you know, to piss somebody off is genius. I love it.
Oh, it's very funny. Yes, sure. Now, why did Hobie write this anyway? So he was mad at Larry for the breakfast tiff, I guess, that Larry accused him of really wanting the French toast. Or not the French toast. That's what my uncle thought it was. The pancakes.
Yeah, well, they have a whole blow up with him and his wife over the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Larry makes a whole big deal of the eggs for the pancakes.
Sure. So his takeaway, by the way, is it that Larry's disrespectful towards women? That was his takeaway of that fight? I mean, it didn't seem like a genderized fight per se. But also, it just seems weird that he's decided for posterity to make an enemy of someone who's very powerful and famous in the industry in which he is, which is comedy writing. But yeah, that's Hobie's prerogative. He's standing up for his woman, I guess, in some world.
Yeah, people seem to have no problem taking sides against Larry David in this universe.
Sure. Well, so Rabbi Edelman himself, from this first conversation, and if we do have the great rabbi on tomorrow, we can ask him this, but like, he seems to have it out for Larry right from the start. He does not like Larry. And what does he know about Larry, I guess, other than what Hobie wrote on his brick? That's what he's basing it off of?
Well, I mean, I guess he assumes that they don't tell stories like that about you or me. If somebody's taking out a brick to say this about someone.
But like, here comes some rich and famous Jew. He's coming to your synagogue. Like, don't you try and cultivate that relationship as the rabbi?
Well, maybe he was told something behind the scenes that makes
apparently.
Him believe
Willie
the
Guys told him. Yeah. There's more candidates, by the way, for Willie Guys who called Larry Nassel after this episode.
Yeah. So, yeah. So he's like, he goes over to the rabbi and he's like, Rabbi, what the hell? And the rabbi's like, listen, we just post the bricks. We don't edit the bricks. Everyone can write whatever they want. Mm-hmm. We like the donors to have free speech. Yeah. And
as the lawyer will later explain, this is freedom of religion. This is
freedom of religion. Now, yeah, yes. It's in the Constitution. That's right.
Yes.
That's what freedom of religion is. Mm. So
doesn't the Torah say something about Isaac and Jedediah, by the way?
Yeah, I don't even know how he came up with these characters in the same story. Yeah. So Larry is like, so like you could like literally anything. He's like, well, no, not if it's hate speech. So Larry's like, but this is hate speech. And he's like, yeah, it's like strong
dislike speech.
Strong dislike speech, not hate speech.
Yeah, that's great.
And there's phenomenal.
Great job by the rabbi.
The rabbi assures him that there is nothing in the Torah about defamatory bricks. And Larry says this whole situation is a shanda.
Yes, which will come back to bite him in the tuchus. Yeah, the Jews built a lot of bricks in the beginning of Exodus. I wonder if they ever carved anything derogatory about the pharaohs into those bricks.
Probably not. They would kill them.
Yeah.
Unless they wrote it in Hebrew and they didn't know what it meant.
Yeah, so now Larry moves on to the next interaction that we'll have here at the synagogue of
Aaron. Part four of this scene.
Yes.
This scene is incredible.
Yes.
Each one of these things could have been like the center comedy of an episode.
Yeah, my favorite for sure is Chris and Abe Zeckelman Mintz. Excuse me, Chris. I was thinking Christopher Mintz Plass. Mantle. Excuse me. That's my favorite one of the four. But yes, they're all great.
Okay. Well, my favorite is the one that we're about to see with Sienna.
Oh, Sienna. Okay.
Yes. So Larry all of a sudden sees Sienna Miller, who he first saw in the airport a few episodes ago, and we of course called at the time that she must be coming back. Like she didn't show up on Curb just for that.
Yes.
And she tells Larry that she is in the process of converting to Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, wow, we're so excited to welcome you. Are you excited? You know, are you prepared to step up your game in the complaining department? And then Larry, he delivers this line that this just made me like fall off my couch. And he's like, I would be remiss if I didn't ask why. Larry,
and she gives an answer that no men have ever given as the reason to convert to Judaism.
Right. So she says it's like
fan of the circumcision.
Yeah. Well, she kind of describes it as this love for Jewish culture, the food, you know, the comedy, and of course, most of all, the circumcised men.
Yes. Yes.
Very, very Whatley-esque, converting to Judaism just for the circumcised men.
Yeah. Does that offend you as a Jew?
No, it just offends me as an uncircumcised man. So it's like it is kind of Whatley-ish.
By the way, so Sienna Miller is British, right? And so I do wonder if – because in America, at least historically, most men are circumcised, you know, even if they're not Jewish. But in Britain, I think the circumcision rate is much, much lower. So, yeah, maybe she's not a fan of what she's had to undergo during her time in London.
Yeah, I mean, I guess converting because you love Jewish culture is a more elegant answer than converting because you want to be able to tell anti-Semitic jokes.
Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, they're both kind of the same. Like, I like Jewish culture and just want to be part of the club a little bit more.
By the way, I did just Google it.
Totally.
Would you like to guess the circumcision rate in the United States? This is men aged 14 to 59.
The circumcision rate of men in the United States?
Yes. 14 to 59. This is from a 2021 study.
I'm very nervous of being way off. I'll say 77%.
You're very close. 80%. That's incredible that you did that. Okay. Would you like to guess the rate of men in Britain? This is between the ages of 16 and 44.
Oh, it's going to be much lower.
Yeah.
I'll say.
I said that already, but.
Oh, okay. 51%.
Yeah, 17%.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that as I was saying. So that's why she's is desperate for the circumcised men because she did not enjoy her time in London.
Got it.
Too many scarves on those. Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
And so here she finds a circumcised man right in front of her, a very attractive one apparently for her for some strange reason.
And she's like all of a sudden sees this wall that like everyone is like looking at, and she's like, oh, what is that? Let's go look at that.
Oh, is that before she asks about that she sees the wall?
Asks about what?
She sees the wall before she asks him out to the dinner. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, because that sort of ends her. Yeah. So she sees the wall. That's the the only thing she doesn't understand about Judaism is what is this wall about? Because she's never been to a hospital or any kind of nonprofit. Right. Like,
what is this wall with names on it?
Yeah.
Obviously, people gave money for that shit.
Yeah.
Larry somehow convinces her that it's the winners of the tennis tournament, which somehow piques her interest, and that he's still able to convince her to not look at it. Like, we'll do mixed doubles together next year.
Isn't that insane? That seems much more interesting. Like, oh, it's just people gave money to the synagogue. Oh no, like that's to him more interesting than it's the tennis tournament. I think that's very interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
He makes the situation worse as always. Hmm.
Last summer I was there's the Englewood Tennis Club in my town of Englewood, New Jersey.
Sounds very fancy.
Yeah, by the way, they're not going to like that I'm saying this on this podcast. Whatever, it's fine. Because the director specifically asked me not to share this with the public media, which I don't know if this counts. But to make a long story short, my father-in-law and my brother-in-law were walking with me to synagogue on a Saturday morning this summer. And as they walked past Englewood Field Club, a man from the field club directed some anti-Semitic slurs at them.
Oh, boy.
And so, which was very unpleasant, as you can imagine.
Yeah, I don't care for that.
Yeah. So on the way home from synagogue, I with them, because I was the local representing them. We went over to the field club to talk to someone to check it out. And whilst waiting, I was looking at the walls that showed all the historical champs of the tennis tournament, actually, on the wall.
Really?
And I was studying for Jewish names, of which prior to the 1990s there were none. And now there's some Jewish names since the 1990s. But yes, for the first 70 years of the Englewood Tennis Club, somehow a Jew managed to never get their name on the wall.
That's so. A shame.
Yes. So anyways, yes. We never found out the culprit, although they did. They had many cameras all over the parking lot in the area, but she told me they're all fake. So great security they got at the Englewood Tennis Club there.
So Sienna Miller asks Larry if he would like to attend a dinner party that she's throwing.
Ooh, yeah.
And Larry looks over at disgusting Irma.
Yeah, Irma doesn't need to say anything here. Just her eating at that table, my wife fell out of bed. She was laughing so hard.
She's like spits like food out into a napkin.
Yeah, Jen is completely in love with Irma, I discovered. She's like
He's just like, no, I'm sorry, I wish, but I just can't.
Which is kind of weird. Like, Larry kind of insults Sienna. Like, he doesn't give her an excuse that makes her think you're still interested, my guy. Come on.
Right. Also, like, he could, like, make up a reason, like, why he's going to some dinner party with Sienna Miller.
Yeah, it's like, not other a date than that, per se.
Right. Yeah. Right. I got invited. Sorry. It was only
every person at that meal coming to have sex with Sienna? I mean, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Like, I got invited with a bunch of other celebrities. Like,
what if he shows up and it's, like, 9 Jewish men and Sienna's, like, doing, like, some kind of, like, survivor
thing?
Yeah. She's got to pick one.
Okay, I mean, I'll take my chances, 1-9.
Yeah, sure. Now, she departs with Schmeitz. So is she inventing a Yiddish term here? Because this is definitely not a Yiddish term.
Yeah, no, she's absolutely trying to make Schmeitz happen.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
And if Sienna Miller's doing it, it might just work.
Yeah, leave the Yiddish to the I can't say to the Jews, because she's now one of us, apparently.
Well, you know, wait till you've crossed the finish line, I think. I think she's still in the process.
Yeah, she hasn't finished all the way.
Before you go about inventing new words, let's make it official.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. So here's the moment of truth for Freddy, where he's dropping Jenna off at work. And when they pull up in front of the Disney store, he's like still in denial for like five more minutes. He's like, oh, so like you work in like the offices above the Disney store.
Yeah.
Oh, so like you run the Disney store, like all like the whole, you know, franchise of Disney stores. Oh, so yeah. And turns out like she's a senior character. You know, so she's not like doing like Doc McStuffins or any of that shit.
Yeah.
But she does like this series of like awesome impressions of like various Disney princesses and characters. It's really great. She tips it off. She tops it off with her awesome Minnie Mouse impression as she says goodbye in character and like dances off. Really, really very impressive here.
Yeah. Now it is interesting. This episode aired, of course, on Sunday night. Sunday morning, this tweet went viral of another character doing a tremendous Mickey Mouse impression. Did you see this tweet, Av?
No.
All right.
I see it now on my screen.
If you close your eyes, you can convince yourself Mickey Mouse has just broken the 400-meter indoor world record for the Netherlands. If you don't know what that is, the 400-meter, these two women from the Netherlands 400-meter team are being interviewed on TV, and we're about to hear one of them speak.
Putting your mind to it, you know exactly what to do. Indoors, how was that for you?
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, it was such a strong race. We were all running so fast, multiple running in the 50, so I knew I had to go out fast. I had Lieke in front of me, so I wanted to be in front, and I could hear how crazy she was behind me, so I was like, okay, this is good. Now we keep going, and this crowd is so amazing.
Yeah, so Femke Bolt, now she's also out of breath because she just ran 100 meters or whatever.
So I'll say, I don't think she sounds like Mickey Mouse. Like, I think she has a very high pitched voice that's like, you know, character-esque like that, but I don't think she sounds specifically like Mickey Mouse or Minnie.
Okay. I thought it was a great impression. Almost as good as Jenna's that we would see just a few hours later on Sunday night.
Yeah. No, I think Jenna's is much better.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
She's also doing it on purpose, though.
Jenna's, yes. Yeah. As opposed to Femke. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So that's Jenna, who, from this point forward, every conversation she will ever have with Freddie will be focused on the great details of her job. It would be impossible not to know what she does.
Right.
But somehow until this point, Freddie was in denial, as you said.
Yeah. So we cut to Larry's house, where Larry is like besides himself. He's like, how could you not know that like this was her job?
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know what to tell you, but like, I can't help it. Like, I know she's the same person, but like, I'm just like not into her anymore. Like, I had this whole image of like who she was and like what that meant. And like Larry's like, yeah, I get it. Like, she was of a particular status, and like that made you feel good. And like now, like, you don't have that anymore. And he's like, yeah, like, what would you do? And he's like, well, I would break up with her because I'm very shallow. And Larry recommends that, like, you know, going forward, you should like do a better job of like asking questions, which like he doesn't even mention, because like, first of all, this is like a good way to like discover information, like such as what is your girlfriend's job?
Yes.
but also, like, girls and women really like it when you ask questions and like make it about them, which is also true of not women.
Yeah.
people like when you ask them questions women. About themselves and you allow them to be the star of the conversation.
Yeah.
Very 101 stuff. I guess there's, you could make an argument that like women in particular like this, but I don't, you know, it's probably not like a huge skew.
I had an interesting conversation with my wife today.
Yeah.
She was basically telling me how much she wishes that she could be a lesbian, basically.
Yeah.
She said, she
likes share clothes.
She says, I like men more, unfortunately, which is annoying. Women are just more evolved and sophisticated as a general rule. It would be nice to be attracted to women, but alas. And then she said, intellectually, it's so dumb to be attracted to men.
I disagree with that.
And then she said, sorry. So I told her she's canceled because it sounds like she's calling gay men dumb. So.
No, it's a, gay have, they get an extra thing. It's fine.
Yeah. Anyway, So my wife thinks that the women are like to listen more or something. I don't know. I wasn't a real listener.
Yeah. So then it all of a sudden,
he's for content on the podcast.
It all of a sudden dawns on Larry. And he's like, oh my God, I asked Jenna to read the script. Like, she is not remotely qualified for this. Which leads us to cut directly over to the cafe where Jenna and Dana, the sponsor's daughter, are having coffee.
Jenna really took initiative here. So she got the script. And then not only did she read
it. Yeah, because she's a nobody who works at the Disney store and allowed
David
notes,
to search and then she took script. She took a meeting. She scheduled a meeting by herself. Yeah.
That's right. So, like, she read the script. She has notes. She's giving it to Dana.
Why did she think she was being asked to do this?
Maybe.
In her mind.
as like a favorite of like an opportunity to, because like she's dating Freddie or whatever or something like that. Like he,
this is a chance for her to move up in the world.
Yeah, she's very excited about this opportunity for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, we will discover that Dana will get kicked out of her writing group. So apparently the notes were not good, but from the meeting, the notes seem pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? She says, tighten it up a little bit, develop the character a little more. It's really refreshing to see a comedic apocalyptic show.
It's right. So it's almost interesting that they didn't put this before the reveal, because this scene could have read as legit potentially. Like the notes she's giving sound legitimate.
Yeah.
Like this meeting plays as a real meeting.
Yeah. But I think it's funnier how we are keep waiting for something. And then, of course, she ends the meeting by saying, I can get you a discount if you want for the whatever it is.
Right. Which could have been like a weird thing when like when we know someone like and she has like a Minnie Mouse backpack. And like that's like when we could have started to get more suspicious.
Yeah.
But like whatever. I guess, the, you know, if Roger Nygaard were here, he could tell us how he edited that, because you could probably tell this, you could tell a different story by just moving that scene, I think, and it completely works. So back over at Larry's house, Leon joins the party and he's got a gift. Freddie has brought the jacket from earlier that he had complimented. And when Freddie leaves, Larry's like, that's crazy, like that you got the jacket. And Leon tells him, yeah, I have this like awesome trick. It's called the I Like It Gambit. When you compliment people's things, they give them to you.
Yeah. What's your take on the I Like It Gambit?
I mean, I think it could work. It's definitely much less than the 50%
yes,
that Larry's.
Yes. Larry's 50% is off. It's in, like in 5%. It's 100%.
Yeah. It's like 5%.
Yeah. I mean,
most of the time when you compliment someone on a thing, they don't give you the thing. They want to keep the thing. They also like it.
Yeah. Who was it that just said, was this on a podcast or was this in real life or on a comedy? Somebody just said recently the opposite, that when someone compliments like an article of yours, your clothing, whatever, they're always doing it because they actually don't like it, but because it's so noticeable that they're reacting, oh my god, look what he's wearing, and then they sort of catch themselves and say, oh, I like it.
Yeah.
So that sounds, when someone
sounds like the logic of a certain Twitter account that I think we're both blocked by.
Oh, is that where that was from?
I have no idea, but it sounds like something he would say. That it's like, if somebody compliments you, it means they don't like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's somebody just said this recently. So yeah.
Zero tweets is the best.
If someone compliments you, means that they want it themselves, they want you to give it to them, or it means that they hate it. So
right. No, if somebody likes your tweet, it means that there's something wrong with it.
Yeah. I have socks, actually like three pairs, because my wife has given to me a couple times with like my kids' pictures on them.
Uh-huh.
Which is not at all uncommon. I've seen friends who have it with their kids' pictures on it. There was a guy on Survivor once, I remember, who had, in fact, he had the exact same ones that one of my pairs, because I recognize the design. Do you remember that, the guy on Survivor who had his kids on his socks?
No.
Well, you're not as big a Survivor fan as me, obviously. It was the season with, I think the Nick one or something. See, the problem is I saw these all in succession. Anyways. It was the first episode. Some guy explains that the reason he's wearing those socks is that he's a dad and he'll be able to connect with people, but it's not like a storyline after that, probably because socks got destroyed. Anyway, so I was wearing these socks.
I just don't know. Yeah. I mean, so it's David. Yeah, I don't know.
I was wearing those socks on Saturday, as I'm often doing, and some guy in my community, you know, an acquaintance, saw them and said, are those your kids' socks? Your kids' pictures on your socks? And as if you'd never seen it before. And I said, but fine. I'm like, yeah. And then there's another guy there. He's like, yeah, that's cool. And then the first guy says, I mean, that's one thing to call it if you don't want to say like deranged or disgusting. And it was like, so weird how deeply he was insulting me or my kids. Or my
right, to your face.
Yeah, behind my back. It was so that guy, I do not think wanted that pair of socks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will not give him a pair of socks with my kids or his kids on them.
You should buy it to him as a goof.
Yeah, it was... He's like deep hatred of the socks. It was so strange. I wasn't continuing the conversation with him because, as you can probably tell, he's not a guy I love having conversations with anyway. But I was sort of curious about like why it bothered him so much.
Yeah, it's unusual. Unusual behavior.
Yes.
So yeah, Leon tries to keep talking, but Larry just plays the blender over him, which is great.
I did buy our mutual friend Harold socks that Harold found very offensive.
What? Oh, do they have the Yankees logo on them?
No, I bought him socks of Ken Herbeck pushing Ron Gant off of first base in the 1991 World Series.
So this is like the equivalent of the brick. Like you're buying hurtful socks for people.
It's like, yeah, I mean, for Twins fans, you wear them because it's fun, but I bought them for him. He's a Braves fan. He's actually a Mets fan who was a Braves fan, and it's complicated. Anyway, yeah.
He converted to Mets fandom just for the misery.
Yeah. Imagine being a Braves fan. You're winning 13 consecutive division titles. And you're like, hey, let me see this other team over here.
Yeah. Harold Jackson.
Yeah. He's a fine fellow, but makes bad decisions in sports fandoms.
Yeah. So, yeah. So now Larry's going to head over to Ted and Cheryl.
Well, hold on. So then Larry, I do love, so the scene ends. And Leon is teaching about the I Like It gambit. And then Leon starts talking about how he wants to sway Durag. Uh-huh. And Larry just starts making his smoothie over Leon talking as a way to say, like, I'm not listening to you. I'm not giving you anything.
Yeah,
which was very funny. Oh, sorry. But, like, the part that confused me about that is, like, Larry doesn't own a sway Durag. So, right? I assume, anyway.
I assume.
So it's, yeah. So it's sort of weird that, like, they should have Leon say something that Larry might actually own. Although everything Larry owns, Leon already takes anyway. So,
whatever. Yeah, it's all his. Larry's gonna head over to Ted and Cheryl. Another great scene here, and he fills in Cheryl on the whole situation with Hobie Turner and the brick, and he can't believe that somebody would write such a thing. Of course, I love women. I especially love having sex with them. And everyone knows I'm a great champion of women.
Yeah, he defends himself about being disrespectful towards women the exact same way that Donald Trump would do so, I think. Like, word for word, pretty much.
Nobody respects women more than me.
Yeah.
Right. Women come up to me on the street, and they say, nobody respects women more than you. They have tears in their eyes. They can't believe that they've never felt so respected. you're right. He does. He goes a little too far here. He asks her, she's like trying to explain, those aren't exactly the same thing as, like, respecting women. And he says that, would you be willing to write a rebuttal brick for me? Which is, like, a brilliant idea, I think, to, like, rebut this brick. He's like, so that way they'll have them together. They'll have Larry David doesn't respect women. And next to that, they'll have I was married to Larry David for many years, and he is a veritable champion of women.
Mm. Yes. Point, counterpoint.
Yes. Cheryl's like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. And Larry's like, well, if that message doesn't work, we could try different messages. Maybe like Larry David is a decent guy. She's not crazy about that. And then Ted comes in and he's like, what's going on? Like, I want to read lines. How long is he going to be here for?
Yeah. It's funny how these two just despise each other at this point.
Yeah, it's great.
Next week, apparently Ted's going to ask Larry for a favor. So
we'll see. The other foots. So he's like, oh, like, we need to get, get a brick. And Ted's like, oh, well, yeah, the thing is, we already got a brick.
Which is, like, such a silly, obvious lie. Why are these two Gentiles buying a brick? And Larry, by the way, trying to catch Ted in the lie, asks, what does your brick say? Why not just ask, what synagogue did you buy the brick for? Because there's no way that Ted knows it's Temple Road of Sholem.
Right. They actually filmed that at the Skirball Center. I looked it up.
The synagogue.
The temple scenes were filmed at the Skirball Center in LA.
Yeah. I do like that the nicest thing that Cheryl can say about Larry is he's a good golfer. Sometimes.
Sometimes, right. Yeah. Happy, maybe she could. So she's like, there's nothing I'm willing to say about you on a brick. Perhaps I would be willing to say about you on a cake. Good job or congratulations. Or as you said, he's a good golfer sometimes. Yeah. Again, Ted's like, all right, so you're going to leave now, Larry. And on his way out, Larry compliments Ted's pen. And Ted's like, well, if you like it so much, here you go. Why don't you take it? And he insists that Larry take the pen.
Yeah. Now, is this an intentional nod to Seinfeld or just coincidence?
100%.
It is. It is. Okay, good. So this Larry remembers. Okay.
Well,
good.
Maybe not Larry, but for sure Jeff Schaefer knows this.
Yeah. He's heard people say take the pen thousands of times. Believe it has me. To he's be. Not impressed with your take the pen.
Yeah.
The only episode that Jason Alexander or the Larry David fill-in never appeared in.
Right. And they had to call back to that in the table read.
Yes. 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 Speaking of no one in this episode, of course, we have no Jeff in this episode. But we do get Susie in the next scene. She is wearing an insane...
That's funny. No Jeff in the Take the Pen. Is this the only no Jeff brought out?
Yeah. She is wearing like a Guns N' Roses themed outfit. My wife absolutely loved this outfit from Susie. And here Larry's trying to get Susie to buy the brick. And his proposal is any woman who Larry impregnated, he not only paid for the abortion, he drove her to the clinic. That's true, by the way.
Yes.
Wonderful message for a synagogue brick. How Susie would know exactly. I don't quite understand why Susie's name would be on that brick, but and Susie could actually legitimately say, I already bought a brick because we see her brick.
He's a big supporter of Title IX.
Yes. Mm. And then we see he's working on his notepad about other proposals. did you see what he had in his notebook?
No, I didn't pause. Do you have any of them?
Yeah, so the handwriting's pretty messy. The first one says, Larry David treats
everyone. That's why I didn't bother, but yeah.
Yeah. Larry David treats everyone with the utmost kindness and respect. So now it's all genders matter, apparently.
Yeah.
And then the second one said, Larry David is a paragon of virtue and the best. And then the rest was covered by his hand, and also there were some cross-outs. So paragon of virtue and the best. So yeah, but those are – no one's going to take those lines, unfortunately. Put them on a brick. Couldn't Larry just – buy bricks himself and put it under fake female pseudonyms if he really wanted to.
Right. Well, that's what he offers Cheryl. She's like, I'll buy the bricks. Yeah. Like, let me use your name. And like,
but don't even use, just use, Linda Goldstein or whatever.
Yeah. Well, as we'll see, he would have been wise to at least buy up all the real estate, make sure before other people could get
sure. Him. Yes. Yes. For sure. Yes. He should not have made available bricks.
Yeah. So Larry gets a call from Cyrus and he's like, so Dana went to speak to that lady you sent her to. And like, we think this is about to go very bad, but instead he's like, she was amazing and she was so down to earth and she was so helpful. And like, we want to buy her a gift, send it over to her office at Disney.
And Larry, by the way, could have just got out of it by saying, oh, thanks so much. Instead, he leans into it and he's like, she's great for a high powered executive. She's so friendly. Like, he doesn't need to lean into the lie here more. He could have just like said the minimum and then he'd have plausible deniability later. I didn't know, which is true. He didn't know.
Yeah.
But he leans in.
Yeah. And Larry just is like, no, he like shoots the whole thing down because obviously he doesn't want to get his cover blown. He says he'll pass along the enthusiasm.
Yes. And while they're on the phone.
Oh, yes. This is Irma, just cold.
Irma screams out, where are my sleep brassieres? And my wife could not. This line absolutely murdered her. She could not. I mean, it was very funny, but it was just funny to watch Jen's reaction. And then the next scream from Irma, never mind, they were in the hamper, they're not that dirty. And at this point, I need a new wife. Like, she was a
fall. She's dead.
Like, we paused the episode for an extended period of time. She had to gather herself, she had to collect her things. Like, yeah, and this is where she is an absolute Irma stan, as I realize.
There's also the great in the middle, Larry screaming, how the fuck should I know?
Exactly. He doesn't mute the phone, by the way. Cyrus can hear this whole thing.
So Larry's like, actually, there's something you can do now that you mention this. You know how you mentioned there should be only 8 weeks left in my hall? I have to stay with Irma thing so that she doesn't have a relapse. Is this somehow we could shorten that maybe? And so I was just like, oh, why? Is there any particular reason? I was like, yes, I hate her.
And I'm going to murder her.
Right. And Cyrus is like, we shouldn't say any things that we don't mean. And Larry's like, no, I mean them.
Yeah. Doesn't a sponsor have a right obligation to like contact authorities if you hear something like that? I don't know.
I think that's why he's trying to like talk him off it.
Yeah.
He doesn't have
now it is a bit annoying to me that all of a sudden here after several months Cyrus proposes to Larry like if she were to break up with you, because like I said this on the podcast weeks ago that he could have done this, and at the time I said how it would annoy me if they did that because it's a repeat of how Larry broke up with Loretta,
right?
Or trying to get but that is what we have coming here.
But the way they go about it is very different and very
yes.
So
and does Larry remember that he previously had a girlfriend who was annoying, sick in that case, and that he had to get her to break up with him? I don't think so.
Of course not. So now we flash forward to Freddie, post the glass having broken on Jenna, and now he sees her for what she is, still a very lovely, funny girl, now completely through a lens of she's obsessed with, her very amateur job, or I guess is she horrible now? I guess we don't know. Was she ever good?
She's a girl in her early 20s who's a wannabe actress, and the first gig she's gotten is doing Disney voices, in front of a store, which is fine, but yeah, that's not the stage of life that Freddie's in.
Yeah,
is he like, done having sex with the neighbor, by the way? Did he impregnate her successfully, or did Leon?
Maybe Leon did.
Yeah.
So yeah, so like obviously, you know, he just had some sort of blindfold on. He was not able to see, you know, he clearly wasn't listening to anything this woman was saying. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we go back to the Chinese restaurant, and Larry wants to sit next to the aquarium again, because obviously we know he wants to check up on his friend, Orange Fish.
Yes.
The waiter tries to lead him to a different table.
The table is reserved.
Larry sneaks away and runs to the aquarium, and he quickly discovers that Orange Fish is missing. Mm-hmm. And he wants to know what happened to Orange Fish, who was stuck to the filter last time. And
Fish the waiter... living best life in downtown.
Right. You know, he's much happier. Larry.
So the claim here is that this fish was moved to a different chain of this restaurant?
Right. He's at the downtown store now, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Larry's like, I can handle the death of the fish. You can tell me the truth. It's okay.
Yeah.
And Larry says, what I think would happen is the fish was stuck and then it died. And the guy, the waiter retorts, no, it was sick and now it's gone. And they go back and forth, neither will give in until the waiter just says, the bottom line is the fish is no longer your problem. Which obviously means he was stuck and then dead. I don't know why. So why does this waiter of like obsessed with gaslighting Larry that about the fish? Like, why didn't they want to make the fish stop suffering earlier when it was stuck?
Yeah, who knows? Larry has had problems in Asian restaurants from the very beginning of the show.
He does. He always miscommunicates with them.
Yes.
So yeah, so they sit down and we find out that Irma spoke a lot in AA today, and Larry wants Richard to tell him, but of course,
but
Richard...
I absolutely love how this really antagonistic fight between Larry and the waiter ends with the waiter very cheerfully saying, "I bring your table some water," with like a smile on his face, like totally fine.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Does not hold the grudge.
Yeah, so
he's just fucking with Larry.
Richard's like, "Oh my god, of course not. I can't break the, you know, the secrecy of AA is sacrosanct." Larry's like, all right, well, what if I put you in my will? And like, Richard doesn't even ask how much. He's just like, all right, so here's what she said. Basically, the reason that she became an alcoholic was because she had a husband and he became terminally ill, and like, he was just like a nightmare to take care of. He
a lot
was
of diaper changing
diapers upon diapers. He was basically like a mummy. He had boils. He was just like, it was just completely miserable. And like, eventually one day, and like, she started drinking, and eventually one day she's just like, I can't do this anymore. I can't live a life like this. I need to, like, you know, live for me a little bit. And like, I'm sorry, but I'm like, you know, I'm leaving. And if I'm ever in a situation like this again, like, I have no second thoughts. I would absolutely do it again.
Yeah.
And Larry's like, oh my god,
even, how much Irma is in a relationship, of course, not lost on any of us.
And so like, Richard's like, okay, so how much do I get? And Larry's like, oh, zero. This was a trick.
I absolutely love how immediately Larry tells Richard, I was lying about that to get the info I want. You're very bad. Thank you for the info.
So yeah, we head back on over to Larry's office, and somehow, as you mentioned before, Larry just like walks into like the personal office of the lawyer.
Like he
not into reception, not into like the waiting area. Like, he's just in his office somehow. I don't know what's going on in this legal office. And what we find out is that Christopher has been sleeping in his office because the whole name situation turned into such a big fight when they got home that Abe kicked him out of the house, and he's been a total wreck. Everything's a disaster. His life is falling apart, and it's all Larry's fault. And Larry's like, my fault. I can't believe you think this is my fault.
This is like a Hall of Fame Curb argument.
This is very good stuff.
And to be clear, they're not arguing about the fault. They're arguing about who has more right to be surprised. Larry's surprise at Chris for sloughing off the blame. He's sloughing. Larry really likes the word sloughing here. Or Chris, who is astounded that Larry won't accept the blame. So they're arguing about the level of surprise. Who has a right to be more surprised?
I am floored. That
yes.
Well, I am astounded, just like, let me tell you. I was like so beyond confident. So here's what Larry wants to sue them for: defamation for the brick. Mm-hmm. And Christopher says, you can't. It's freedom of religion. Freedom of religion somehow allows you to say whatever you want about anything. This lawyer might be terrible.
It might be. Well, we haven't even got to the failure to file
that, right. We find out that he was so preoccupied with his crumbling life. Yeah. And obviously he has, I guess he's just like a one-man shop.
No calendar, no assistant, no associate, nothing. Yeah.
He forgot to file this very basic motion, and it's completely too late. There's nothing to be done. And now they get into a fight about whose fault it is. Somehow he's now blaming this on Larry. That's Larry's own fault that his lawyer missed the deadline.
Yeah, blame Larry 100% for your fight with your husband. I get that. But how the fuck are you blaming him for your fuck up of not fat? I mean, like, you had one job here, apparently. And now I want to get an argument, which is more impossible to believe, that this guy would screw this up and then blame Larry, or that Larry wouldn't fire and get a new lawyer at this point.
Right.
Like,
right.
How could this guy do a worse job than so far?
Right. He's like, don't worry, I'll win the case. I'm very confident I'll win the case.
Go back to Hitler Joe. He looks like Mocha Joe, but at least he's competent.
Yeah, he probably gets stuff done.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, like, this guy should be convinced, because Larry has, like, a huge malpractice case against him now. If you guys could think it, like, this thing could have been, like, dismissed with a letter, and he just had to, like, make the deadline. And now Larry could go to jail for a year.
Yeah.
That's a very
That would not look good for Larry in the public, the hero image, if he gets convicted and then turns around and sues his lawyer for malpractice.
I guess, yeah. I think he'd rather get out of jail and have his
interview. Yes. Yeah.
Jail seems very bad. So Larry takes one more gambit at the naming rights, and he says, just so you know, I think a good compromise would be Ziggy Zekelman.
Yes. By the way, the compromise here is you fucked up my court case, so you let me name your child.
Yeah, seriously.
That's the proposed compromise.
He's like, how about if you want me to win your trial, stop naming my baby?
Yeah.
Which is also a fair way of framing it, I guess. So now we go to the big turning point of the episode.
I got a big problem with this scene, and my rating of this episode, which is gonna be unpopular, I fear, is gonna be largely because of this scene.
So I also have a big problem with this scene, but it slightly diminishes the episode for me, but doesn't hurt it overall.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we have the same thing.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, so we have Larry and Freddie sitting in a car, and they're just both like, we're both in this terrible situation, and they realize that they're both like the fish, stuck. Mm-hmm. Not sick, yes. Stuck.
Yes. Now Larry's situation, to be clear, is that he is dating someone whose sobriety is dependent on him not breaking up with her, and thus he cannot break up with her no matter how miserable he might be. That I understand. Freddie is dating a woman he met 2 weeks ago. What exactly is his crisis? Why is he stuck?
Right. And also, like, his situation isn't, like, that bad. It's, like, a very, like, good-looking, fun, energetic girl who, like, you're, like,
but he doesn't... Number one, he doesn't need an excuse to break up. Okay, so you're saying number one, he doesn't need to break up with her.
Repulsive, like, meaning it's like, yes. Like Larry hates her.
Sure. So he doesn't need to break up with her. If he wants to break up with her, he can break up with her. There's nothing restricting him. There's no consequence.
He should break up with her if he doesn't like her, but it's like not an emergency that he break up with her.
Yes. If he needs to break up with her, and if he needs an excuse to break up with her, why does he need to choose the exact identical excuse that Larry takes?
Right, especially when it was an excuse that was particularly geared towards Larry's woman.
Yes. And then, of course, most egregiously, this is not George Costanza in 1994. In 2024, everyone has a computer in their hands. You cannot make up a fake Groat's disease. Like, it's a funny Seinfeld curb callback, the Groat's disease, but, like, you can't make up a disease that does not exist at all and tell one person, let alone two people.
Right.
The lie gets caught immediately.
Yeah. This would work perfectly if it was Irma. And I'll tell you, when I got to the scene where, you know, she leaves and he does the J.G. Wentworth dance, I thought the episode was ending there. I was, like, so excited. I was like, Larry wins, like, amazing ending. And then
you do like when Larry wins. And
I love when Larry wins.
Which, of course, unlike Jen, I don't like.
I'll still argue that Larry wins but at the end, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Now, taking into account everything I just said, as we cut to the next scene, Jenna's reaction with the giant Minnie Mouse gloves is amazing. It's very, very funny.
So Larry tells Freddie he has a plan, and now we get the cross-cutting of them telling the plan. You know, they both reveal to each, you know, their respective girlfriends that they have Groat's disease, and, you know, they're gonna have the shaking, incontinence, 24-hour care. Larry,
you'll
tells
have
Irma,
to hold my penis when I pee.
Yes, that would have killed me.
Well, you know, to get it into the bottle, it's very hard.
We immediately, immediately we have them in the driveway. Irma's completely packed up. She's out.
It'll leak. I can't do it.
I can't do it. If I just hear the word hospice, I vomit.
Where is Irma going? Like, did she maintain another home the whole time she was living in Larry's mansion?
It doesn't even matter. She won't even go back. She's just getting out of here as fast as she can.
Yeah.
She's so terrified of even being close to a situation like this again. So she's like, all right, goodbye. Like, I appreciate. Larry's like, okay, yeah, take off.
Now, Larry, already with a perfectly, like a perfect win, his work plan has worked perfectly, decides to grab just a little more and decides to go for the I Like It Gambit. Again, all Larry winning. Works perfectly.
Yeah, and you thought that the scarf was going to do him in, right? I thought
It
would be interesting.
Pulling defeat from the jaws of victory.
Right, rather than it be gloves that she's looking for if she was going to get, like, a new scarf now because she gave hers to Larry. But, yeah, so, like, she drives off, and as soon as, like, the second she drives off, like, Larry, like, jumps in the air. He starts dancing. Like, this is, like, going to be, like, an all-time gif now, like, Larry dancing here. He starts belting into the J.G. Wentworth music. And, like, I told you, like, I totally thought this was going to go straight into the curb credits. I thought this was just going to be like a classic, like, you know, end of the first half of the season, like Irma's gone, and now, like, you know, back half, like, move on to, like, you know, how does Larry's story end, like, post Irma. But then, of course, we circle back, and
I hate to say it, I did not love the scene. A couple things. First of all, Larry's sort of fake shaking when he was trying to get rid of Irma, it was sort of reminded me of like Trump when he mocked the you know, the reporter who had the Arthur grip up, like the, you know, the
yeah, piece. Except Larry's supposed to be like an asshole who's pretending to be sick.
Yeah. So that's like a bit of a bad vibe. But then also he starts singing the J.G. Wentworth song, which is super annoying, and now it's in my head again. Like, that should have departed with
amazing.
Irma.
No, that was amazing.
Don't bring it back. I hate that.
No, that was the perfect conclusion to the Irma saga.
So I thought if we never see Irma again.
Well, we may or may not, but either way, that was a perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
In my opinion. But our episode is not over. We have one more panache at the end. We have Irma stopping at the mall, and I guess she's looking for gloves, and she didn't want to go back. And her solution is, I'm going to go to the Disney store and buy Minnie Mouse gloves or Mickey Mouse.
Yeah. I think those are the gloves that she left. She has.
Oh, they were the exact ones.
Said they're well, so I actually thought at first, because we had already seen the ridiculous gloves that Jenna was wearing in the car with Freddie, I thought that she was actually asking for those specific gloves. but she wants oven mitts that have little pictures of Minnie Mouse on them, is what she says.
Got it.
Yes.
And Jenna's standing outside in her Cinderella costume. Mm-hmm. I also thought, so in order for, you know, obviously they want to have this, like, you know, information crossover at some point. I thought it would have been clever if instead they had gone the route of having Jenna at some point dressed as Tinkerbell, and somehow she ends up with Leon, and Leon spills it to her or something like that. And that gets it out to Irma.
I think what appeals to Leon about Tinkerbell, and by the way, that wasn't in the script, so they couldn't do that. That was just JB going
right,
off.
Right.
But Leon likes the smallness of Tinkerbell, right? He wants to be able to fuck someone who's, like, you know, an inch tall.
Of course.
So this 5'4" woman doesn't interest them.
Yeah. So they immediately start comparing notes. Which, like, to your point, like, this didn't even require this chance. It's like encouragement. Like, they travel enough in similar circles that, like, the news of both Freddie Funkhauser and Larry David breaking up with their girlfriends because they have Groat's disease is going to be mentioned more than one person. Yeah. And then it's going to be like, wait, you both have Groat's disease? Like, that's going to circle back. It had to be the unique thing of, like, he tells it to Irma, who, like, nobody else knows, and then she, like, skips town, never to be heard of again, and, like, there's nobody to fact check.
She falls off the wagon.
Right. No, she doesn't, because, like, she has agency.
Yeah.
It's like she's the one who leaves, so it's fine.
Yeah, but if she falls off the wagon, it's a good way to explain why she dropped. See, because the problem with Curb is L.A. is an extraordinarily small town where you run into the same people over and over again until we no longer need them, and then they're just gone out of the series for forever.
Yeah, so they unravel the plot. They're outraged.
Right. We ran into Troy Kutzer, what, like, three times in one week?
Right. They're outraged at Larry and Freddie. And just then, Cyrus and Dana walk off. They're shocked to see Jenna standing outside in a Cinderella costume because she works there, not at Disney. And they find out that Larry lied to them about Jenna's position. Got They got Dana thrown out of her program. And they all call Larry and Freddie pricks and jerks. And we cut to a final scene of as the music plays, we get a shot of the new wall at the temple and a series of new bricks, including ones from Cyrus York that says Larry David is a lying bastard.
Yeah.
Larry David is a homewrecker from A.B. Zeckelman. Larry David is a coward and a cheat, which was paid for by Irma Kostrowski. And Rabbi Edelman, which is what he's called here. We'll get to the fact that in the credits he's called Rabbi Bachman, so maybe somebody can explain that. It says Larry David is a shanda for the goyim, which, of course, is a very Yiddish.
You explain that expression for the goyim listeners.
Yeah, so it's a very particular – so Shonda, of course, means like an embarrassment or a disgrace. But Shonda for the Goyim, it's like, it literally means like you're an embarrassment in front of the Gentiles. But it goes to a –
it means
you're
making Jews look bad.
It's a very specific Jewish insecurity of not just looking bad, but like specifically looking bad in front of the Goyim. Like that the Goyim are going to think bad of Jews.
Yeah, they're so going to be, you did something bad and you're Jewish, and so therefore the Goyim are the Gentiles are going to think
and,
all Jews are bad.
And it's like, and we even as growing up, it's like we always had this concept of like, you're supposed to be like on your best behavior when you're around Gentiles because like we don't want Gentiles to think bad about
to know how bad we are. Yeah.
It really was a thing that you were taught.
In Orthodox circles, we call it Chil Hashem, but yes, the same concept. We see the wall. We see literally nobody has a personal message on their brick, except it's just names, except for these. So let's go through them one by one. So Cyrus goes for Larry David as a lying bastard. I think Larry does have an easy out here. I didn't know what she did. All I was told is she works for Disney. Like, I'm sorry, but, you know, he wasn't really in the wrong. I think he could have had an out there. Abe Zuckelman, as you said, goes with Larry David as a homewrecker. This kind of implies that Larry committed adultery, which is a bit unfair, right? Like,
he screwed the wife of a man in a wheelchair. Yeah,
and then Irma, by the way, again going for infidelity, she goes with Larry David as a coward and a cheat. Although it implies infidelity, it is a decently accurate description, I think.
And he is a coward only because he was bullied into being a coward by the sponsor.
Yeah. And you said, and I think you're right, like Larry would prefer Irma's brick in perpetuity than spending another 8 weeks with Irma in his home, right?
8 minutes.
Yeah. So he can't really complain that much.
Like, this is the cost of doing business. The problem is, and I think we're going to get more of this Sienna Miller story, is that he wants an exit.
Wall.
Right. He wanted an exit that doesn't besmirch him, you know, his reputation and jeopardize his possibilities with Sienna Miller. Even if Sienna Miller is the cost of this, I think he sacrifices everything in this episode to be out from Irma, if that's where we are. And I think he might be. I think we might be. I think this is a good place to part from Irma. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. Now, I do have more questions for the rabbi. First of all, I don't think Shonda for the Goyim is an expression that a reform rabbi is ever using in 2024. That's just not happening. But also, and I said this in the first scene when we saw him, I never understand why Edelman hates Larry anyway. I assume it's a reaction to the other bricks. But
We'll see if he has anything for us.
Yeah. So we'll hopefully if we meet with the good rabbi, we'll get to ask him. I don't think it's going to be a huge surprise. I think people can guess within a range, but how do you rate this episode?
Yeah, I've been very enthusiastic about this episode from the second I saw it. I've now seen the episode 3 times. I usually see the episode twice, so 3 times is only one additional time. My wife fell asleep during the opening chords of Curb last night. So she missed it entirely. She somehow slept through me giggling my ass off on the couch right next to her for basically 40 minutes straight. I completely love this episode. I'm only remiss of holding it from like that top tier just because of like what that top tier means. So I'm going to say that this episode is pretty, 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 pretty good. 4.5 pretties, just short. It's just outside that elite club of Curb episodes. But like, this to me was just like one of the like funniest beginning to end Curb episodes I can remember in a very long time. Like it maybe doesn't have as much like memorable iconic stuff as like your Palestinian chicken and your what's it called, like with Bill Buckner, like those, you know, classic just like meta stuff. Like it's just like bit after bit after bit, great line after great line, great conversation after great conversation. And I think it does really tie together very well in the end. We get like a really sweet tribute to Richard Lewis. And I think even just like Fish stuck as a little bit of an existential meaning for Larry as we wind down on this series, and like, you know, to have that in the episode where we say goodbye to Richard Lewis, as we start to say goodbye to all of these characters, and you know, them trying to, you know, whether or not they're going off to better pastures. I thought this was just like an absolutely top level episode of Curb. I have it like in my top 15 easily. I think I have it either 13th or 14th. I'm still figuring that out, but it's like just below that, you know, top 10 elite tier for me.
Okay. Kind of like what I said about last week's episode, I will say this. First of all, it was 40 minutes of nonstop entertainment. It was a lot of the times the 40-minute episodes you feel they could have been trimmed. This doesn't need any trimming. I agree. Very funny. Very strong episode. I think this episode takes bigger swings than last week's episode, which I respect. But I think it has a lower batting average for that reason. There's two different types of absurdities on a show like Curb. So the first one is like the bricks. Yes, of course, there's no way in the world any synagogue would permit defamatory bricks. But within the world of the show, we accept that premise. That's the heightened absurdity that is the world of Curb that we love. And it's funny. And so I don't have an issue with sort of that type of absurdity. But then there's the one where Larry involves Freddie in his scheme to dump Irma. And like the entire premise of the episode with the defamatory bricks is based on that. If Freddie isn't involved, Irma doesn't talk to Jenna and uncover the scam. And then, you know, they don't run in. Like, there's no logical reason within the world of the show why Larry would have to involve Freddie here. And yep. So to me, this is like it's a little similar to the first two episodes of the season in that we have Larry's desired payoff for the end of the episode. And then we try and work backwards to get there. We don't really do it so successfully. By the way, it kind of reminds me of the end of Game of Thrones a little bit in that respect. So, like, yes, the episode is very funny and it has good stories, but like that massive flaw just gnaws at me. No Jeff, also, I had to lower it a half a pretty for that because we need Jeff. But listen, on the positive note, it is a very, very funny episode. We say goodbye to Irma, which I'm happy about. Larry dated for nine episodes, by the way, which is three times as long as he ever dated anyone else on the show other than Cheryl. Dr. Jen's not glad to see her go, but I am. So listen, it's a good episode. If they had come up with better internal logic for how everyone uncovers Larry's lies, it could have been an all-time classic to me. But with that flaw, I have to say that this episode was pretty, 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 pretty good. That's 3.5 pretties. The 44th best episode of the show for me. It's a good ranking. It's a good ranking. Just, you know, not as high as you or, you know, the instant reaction I saw in our group last night. So I'm sorry, guys. Lo siento. But I like the episode. I do like it. I like it a lot. It's a very good episode of a great show. But yeah, not a Hall of Fame episode for me. Av.
Oh, come on. Be a come with guy.
Who is your come with guy?
Yeah, my come with guy is a come with gal. It's Sienna Miller. She's joining the tribe. I will tell her, like, you know, we she got all the brochures about culture. Someone may want to give her a brochure about pogroms, just so that she's, like, you know, fully informed before. You know, we wouldn't want her to be surprised. Yeah. But you know, she's joining the tribe. She's excited about it. She wants to have sex with Larry David for some reason. So yeah. We're down with that. She likes uncircumcised men. She likes Jews. She likes Jewish men. She likes Judaism. So what's there this bad to say about Sienna Miller? She's a beautiful person.
Yeah, pretty compelling argument for you here. I have to be honest. Like, I sort of struggle to think of who the come with guy should be. Now, in honor of the great Richard Lewis, I will give it to him because, mm-hmm. you know, fair. He died this week. And then he has a pretty significant role in this episode. He killed for 45 minutes, of course, in the AA meeting. So I will give it to Richard. But as I was watching the episode and when I finished the episode, I spent like a couple minutes thinking and I couldn't think of like a clear candidate, which is kind of a bad sign. Leon is fantastic, but is given a very limited role. Of course, as I've said multiple times, no Jeff at all. The truth is, if not for Richard's passing, I might have given it to Larry himself because it's unusual. We have five storylines in this episode. Fish stuck, the name, right? Like the name of the baby, the script reading, the Irma breakup, the defamatory brick. All five of those are Larry-driven stories, which is unusual that he sort of like pushes every one and none of them is like, you know, Leon having his own story or Joe. Like this is a very, very Larry-heavy episode. He's really carrying the whole episode. So I might have given it to Larry. But yes, I will give it to Richard in honor of his dear departure.
You're a fucking asshole. That's what you are.
Who is the fucking asshole?
I'm going to say it's Freddie Funkhauser because... Ooh. He's like clearly not paying attention when his girlfriend is talking to him because he doesn't know what her job is. And then like he like basically admits that he's just like incredibly shallow once like, you know, all the substance that he liked kind of goes out the door as soon as like the status window is broken. Either that or he's like so delusional and blinded by status that he doesn't realize like that she's like a tween talking nonsense. So either way, he's horrible. And then, you know, Larry should not have given away the goods on this great plan, but like Freddie should have not have shared it. Like he should not have used it.
Yeah.
He blows up Larry's spot. Like, Larry's in a much worse situation. You know, he could have used a different disease at the very least. Like, he didn't have to copy even that.
No, yeah. It makes no sense why he does this. Yeah, he really does blow up Larry's spot because seemingly, you know, if not for that pesky kid, Jenna, Larry would have gotten away with it with Irma. So, Freddie Funkhauser, I see your point here. To me, though, last week I gave it to the world's worst therapist, Melanie Turner. This week I have to give it to the world's worst attorney, Christopher Mantle. I mean, he's the absolute worst lawyer, and he blames Larry for his fuck-up. Also a pretty bad husband. All in all, you know, great last name. Not much else you can say positive about this fucking asshole. So, yeah, he is my fucking asshole. And Av,
as you mentioned at the top, we are going to be recording The Postman tomorrow. So I will ask you, is it time for The Postman? The answer is no. You'll get that tomorrow.